Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to another installment of the PVD Cast. I'm your host, John Orlando, bringing you the only podcast that's live and indirect from Providence, Rhode Island, via the capital city of Columbus, Ohio. And this is number 72, ladies and gents. Man, 72! I would have never thought that I would have gotten to 72, but alas, here I am. This particular episode features a guest that I have been wanting to have on this podcast for a while. He's a gentleman that made quite a mark on independent professional wrestling here in Columbus, Ohio, with his time in the IWA and FIW. The man that I'm speaking about is the rough and tumble Shank Dorsey. Now, for those of you that may be a little bit ignorant of who he is, we'll get into how he developed that character and how he got into this crazy business of professional wrestling, and even talk about one of his new endeavors, which is New Ohio Wrestling. And New Ohio Wrestling has a show, their very first show, August 1st, which Shank and I will talk about. So it's going to be a great trip down memory lane. I have very fond memories of watching Shank Dorsey as a fan and then also working with him in FIW. And, you know, for a guy that looked so rough and tumble and hardcore on television, he's one of the nicest guys in the back, and I hope that doesn't, you know, ruin kayfabe or whatnot. But anyways, with that, ladies and gents, we're going to get into it here, but let me just remind you of a couple of other things real quick. As I've mentioned on my last edition of the PVD Cast, trying something new with my break, before I go into my conversation with Shank Dorsey, I want to remind you that Bluehost.com is the official web hosting service for the PVD Cast. Bluehost offers great customer service and competitive pricing. And let me just be honest with you. There's been a few times where I've had an issue with PVDcast.com. A simple phone call or an online chat with the Bluehost tech and whammo! The issue was fixed. And I know right now Bluehost has slashed its prices. You can get hosting services for $3.49 a month. That's right, $3.49 a month. So there's no excuse for having your own website for whatever reason it is, whether it's for business, whether it's for personal, whether it's for school, whatever, man. Just head on over to Bluehost.com to get all the information. And again, I cannot put over Bluehost enough. It's a great company. Definitely love it. And, you know, I also want to talk about something else that I mentioned on my last podcast as well. Of course, that being the CD1025 FM crowdfunding campaign that's going on right now. And, you know, I stated it before, I gave my, what I could give, I gave my endorsement, I gave my money, what little bit I could, to that great, great cause. As I mentioned, you know, the station has started this crowdfunding opportunity in an attempt to purchase a broadcasting license. And, you know what, again, it's a great station here in Columbus, Ohio. It's one of only two independent radio stations in America. That's right. All the corporations have gobbled up all the other stations, and, you know, why not contribute to something as awesome as one of two independent radio stations here in America? And I look, again, I don't care where you are. I don't care if you're listening in Northeast Ohio, Northwest Ohio, Southeast Ohio, Southwest Ohio. It doesn't matter where you're listening. Do something good. I urge you. You got a couple of bucks. Just head on over to cd1025.com/invest. And you'll be taken right to where you can give whatever you're comfortable with giving. A buck, $2, $5, whatever, do it. Do it today. I urge you. It's a great endeavor. Help this radio station. That's all I got to say. And with that, ladies and gents, I'm going to throw it into a very quick musical interlude. And then on the other side of that musical interlude will be my conversation with Shank Dorsey. The man that is quite notorious in many, many people's minds from his time in professional wrestling here in Columbus, Ohio, joining me, Mr. Shank Dorsey. Shank, how you doing, man?
Oh, doing great. How you doing?
I can't complain. Look, I'm just going to be honest. I've been trying to get you on this podcast for a while.
Yeah? It's been a year or two now, I think.
It has. I like that you got no... I like that there's no excuses, man. I admire that.
Yeah, that's it. I just didn't feel like I really had anything to say. I mean, yeah, I could have brought up some old stories and stuff, man, like that. But, you know, I've been out of the business for over 10 years, and I was just like, yeah, nobody probably even remembers me, or nor do they care.
You know what? I'm going to beg
there's not really All right.
I'm going to beg to differ on that one, but okay, you know. Anyways, well, let's, you know what, every time somebody from this great, great environment of professional wrestling comes on this podcast, I always start with the same question. Why did you get involved in professional wrestling?
I got involved just because I've always wanted to do it as a kid. I remember growing up, I used to watch Georgia Championship Wrestling and all that on TBS way back in the day, and I was always a fan of the bad guys, and, you know, I never really liked the good guys. So, you know, it was just as a kid. I mean, a couple funny stories, you know, when they had the career day at my middle school, and we were all in a library, and people were writing down what they wanted to do for a living or what they wanted to be when they grow up. I wrote down professional wrestler. And, yeah, and the guy that was doing the career day was reading people's, you know, what they wanted to be. And when he pulled mine out, it was anonymous. I didn't have my name on it, but he pulled out my card and he just started laughing. And he was like, all right, now who wrote down professional wrestler? And was like laughing at it. And it kind of, you know, as a kid, you know, I was like embarrassed. So I didn't raise my hand and admit it. So I was just like, okay, you know, but, from there on out, yeah, just been growing up. I always wanted to do it. And then I saw, you know, the IWA commercial on TV one day, and I just went there and gave it a shot.
All right, well, let's go back for a minute. You said that you, while watching Georgia Championship Wrestling, you always identified with the bad guys. There was not even one good guy that you liked?
No, not really.
Really?
I said,
okay.
I hated Tommy Rich. I wasn't a big fan of Dusty Rhodes. I mean, I loved, like, the original Four Horsemen.
Mm-hmm.
Mad Dog Buzz Sawyer was a favorite of mine. Bruiser Brody. I mean, I just liked all the bad people for some reason. I love that.
All right. Well, you know, I just mentioned I was a mixed bag. I didn't love every good guy, and I didn't hate every bad guy. I had, like, a mixed bag, you know, and I just,
right.
You know, some of those rough and tumble guys, like Ronnie Garvin. I thought maybe no interest in Ronnie Garvin. You didn't like
not too much really.
Anyways, that's a funny story. While you were telling the story about career day, I can harken back to being a freshman in high school, and I have to share this. I had a speech class where I had decided that I was going to demonstrate pro wrestling moves on a buddy of mine, and he no-showed the day that I was to give my speech.
Nice.
So, you know, that was my marked behavior in, you know, middle school, high school. That's
right.
Anyways, but I digress. So you saw the commercial for the IWA. So you headed on down to Fifth Avenue there. And what was your first impressions of the IWA when you got there?
When I got there, I mean, everybody that, you know, is from the area has heard the 1333 horror stories and all this and that. And, you know, so when I got there, you know, it was dingy, it was low ceilings, the ring looked like it was dangerous to even be in, and everything that was probably normal about me told me to turn around and walk out, but, yeah, just, I didn't, and I just, because I just wanted to try it so bad, and everybody that talks about, you know, that's in the business and talks about it, their dream is to be in the WWE or to make it big, and all this and that. And I mean, yeah, if that opportunity would have ever came, I definitely would have considered it. But my dream and main goal was I just wanted to see if I was good enough to do one match. And, you know, that was basically it. You know, I was like, I just wanted to see if I was good enough to get in there and do one good match and be considered a wrestler. That was pretty much my goal at the time. But yeah, when I walked in there, if I remember right, it was just Bull Miller and I think Bud and Cat, the infamous Hatteries were there, and I think that was it. It was, you know, dark and dingy. It was before their training sessions and stuff. And then I just got in there and had like a quick 2 or 3 minute tryout deal with Bull. And then we talked for a while, and then he just asked me what I thought, and I just ended up going back. And I do remember on the drive home from the tryout, and I was driving home and I was like, this is dumb. I'm not doing this. You know, I'm not going to be a wrestler. And then the day of the first training session, I just drove up there and did it. And I just kept going.
Did you have an athletic background, like in high school? Did you play football or any sports or anything like that? Or
no, I was a big dumb in high school. I was one of the guys that cut school and didn't do what I was supposed to do. And so, yeah, no, I mean, I liked playing football, but I never played any high school athletics. I really never did have any athletics in my background. I loved wrestling. I wanted to see if I could do it, and I just went there.
So was Bull in charge of your training?
At the start, when I first started, there was really nobody there. So he actually was the person that was training me at the beginning. And then after a while, like, more people started coming in, and people, you know, that I'd never seen there before. And like Roadblock, Max Mayhem, he was actually the first one to like take me under his wing and gave me my first wrestling outfit and showed me a lot of stuff. And then the Casanova Clique, you know, Dale Johnson, Chip Allgood, they, you know, started coming around, and I started like, you know, getting in there with them. Sherman Tank, he came in, you know, like all these guys. And, you know, at the time I was just, you know, like, oh man, these guys are wrestlers. They're awesome, you know. So I just kind of sucked up to them and latched on to them. And, you know, they just started showing me stuff here and there. So Bull Miller did start training me, but I mean, it was basically like all of us just getting in the ring and, you know, figuring out the hard way, just getting in there and doing it. And if it hurt too bad, then we figured that was probably wrong.
So if I'm man, I don't know if you can answer this question. Was there, at the time that you came in, was Bull like transitioning from like this particular roster to a newer roster? Or because you mentioned there was not a lot of people in that training class, was there kind of a flux time period there where he was phasing out some guys and bringing other guys in, or what?
Not that I'm familiar with.
Okay.
Like I said, the people when I started that were there before me is the ones I mentioned. And I even think DDK was there too, a little bit before me.
Okay.
And, you know, like I said, when I was doing my training sessions, they weren't there. And then I just noticed during the evening classes, they would start showing up, you know, they would just start popping in. And I was like, hey, who's this guy? You know, let me see if he can, you know, show me some stuff. And then Coyote got in there, and he started training after me. So we were kind of like each other's test dummies. And, we would like do moves on each other. We had no idea what we were doing. And then, like I said, you know, if it hurt, we figured it was wrong. And, you know, like I said, but I don't know if there was any kind of transition. It just like he started, seemed like, I guess he sort of, now that I look back at it, he maybe started taking it seriously. And, you know, he was running the school and starting commercials and all that. And people were finding it on cable access just like I was. I just seemed like I happened to be one of the first new guys at the time to start going. And then, you know, like I said, the veterans back then, you know, the Roadblocks and the Sherman Tanks and the Casanova Cliques and, you know, they just kind of stepped in and offered their, you know, was kind enough to take me under the wing and offer their knowledge. And, you know, Bull just, kind of started to step back and let them do things. And then after that, everybody else started coming in, you know, the Matt Masons and the Marcus Dillons and, you know, all those kind of guys. So, yeah, I think I was just kind of maybe I came in at the beginning of like the new group of guys at the time, maybe.
What was probably the best piece of advice those veterans gave you? Early on.
Yeah, probably the best piece of advice was basically just don't trust everybody, because there was a lot of people. I mean, I have this thing where I think everybody has, you know, means well, and, you know, there's nobody out there that's trying to do you dirty. And I kind of learned kind of quick that that wasn't the case. You know, there's a lot of people talking behind your backs and you know, stuff like that. And, you know, people putting you down so they could get a match type of thing. And it wasn't those guys that were helping training me. It was just, you know, even like other promotions, you know, that we weren't, I wasn't real familiar with at the time. Cause like I said, I just went in there totally clueless. I had no idea. It was a basically just learn as you go type of thing. Yeah, you know, just kind of those throw crap at the wall and something's about eventually going to stick type of deals.
Yeah. So I'm completely ignorant of this, because I'm going to express that the first time that I ever saw Shank Dorsey was on that cable access show as well. Did you have a previous character that you were trying out? Because you mentioned Roadblock gave you some ideas.
No, not really.
Not really? So you just, right from the get-go, where'd you come up with the idea to be the rough tumble convict.
That actually came from Roadblock, to be honest.
Really? Okay.
Yeah. And we were just thinking of different gimmicks, and I don't know, yeah, because I had my missing teeth, and my front tooth and the tooth beside it was missing the whole time, so that kind of played into it. And he, you know, said that, you know, on their show, that on Bull's show at the time, there wasn't a mean prisoner or heel guy, and he said I should probably do the, you know, try to be the ex-con, and I was like, okay, you know, I want to be a bad guy anyway, so let's try it. And he came up with the Shank name from Shawshank Redemption, and so I could use it. And our initial idea was to make this little fake prison Shank, and I was to use it throughout the matches and, you know, the foreign object, and then you turn around and put it back in your tights.
Yeah.
But and if you watched the first match, my first match ever was with him, and I tried to do that, but I pretty much sucked at it. And yeah, which it would have got better if I'd have stuck with it, but it just kind of didn't feel right, so I just quit using it. And then the Dorsey, the last name, I was driving to work one day, and this tractor trailer drove by me, and I looked on the back of the trailer, and it had a little tag. It said Dorsey for Dorsey Tractor Trailers, and I was like, "Yeah, Shank Dorsey, that sounds good. What the hell?"
Yeah,
that was pretty much how it came about.
Did you like do any type of research or anything to kind of get that character, you know, really over? Because I'm going to confess, and I'm not saying this just to kiss butt or anything. While watching the IWA, I always said, "Wow, that dude looks like a tough dude. Like I would be afraid of him if I met him." You know, which, you know, I think that many people tell you my first few weeks in FIW, I treaded very lightly because there were some folks back there that, you know,
were
tough son of guns, you know, and you know, I don't want to break kayfabe, but you ended up being one of the nicest guys. Like after the first couple of shows where with you, I'm like, oh man, that's really remarkable that he's that rough and tumble son of a gun out there, but he's so nice and laid back and cool back here. You know,
yeah.
So how did you develop that character? Did you do any research?
I mean,
just kind of threw it up on the wall and saw what stuck.
Yeah, well, I watched just some prison movies. Like, I watched The Shawshank Redemption, since he's the one that brought that up. And then, you know, I just I don't even remember any names, but just took prison movies and watched them and seen how they acted. And then just, you know, things I've heard through the years.
Okay.
And, you know, I guess sometimes that character, I mean, my wife hates Shank Dorsey. She'll still tell you to this day that she thinks Shank Dorsey's the biggest asshole she's ever met. And she always hated the character. So I think it's, you know, me being just kind of laid back and nice and taking a bunch of crap. And when I got in there and Shank came out, it was just a way for me to relieve some of that anger, I guess, maybe.
Okay. I gotcha. So who developed the Dorsey Horsey? Was that all you?
No, that wasn't on me. That was a bunch of different people. And if I remember correctly, the person that first came up with the idea was Sherman Tanks. Now she's his wife. We were just all joking around while some other people was in the ring, and we were just standing on the bleachers and just talking. And somebody made a joke about, you know, like jumping on somebody's back and riding them and smacking them on the butt. And she said that, you know, made a suggestion that I should do that and call it the Dorsey Horsey. And I believe it was her that even came up with the name. And, you know, like I said, I kind of like to put a couple comedy spots in there every now and again when I could, just to kind of mix it up. You know, I don't want to be just like all straight mean, you know, maybe do a little comedy thing here and there. So I was like, yeah, what the heck, let's try it. And, you know, I did it. And, of course, the first, I think if I remember correctly again, the first person I did it to was Sherman Tank. So he had to pay the price for her idea. So.
Now, if I may bring up another controversial antic of yours, which I may have had a name, I don't remember. But in FIW, I believe there was a glove involved with a thumb in someone's bum, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, it's a shocker, yeah.
Yeah. Where did that come from? Was that ever done in IWA, or was that strictly FIW?
Yeah, that came after FIW.
Okay.
And I say, I believe I just made that up myself, and because at the time, for some reason, there was a phase where people was talking about the shocker, and it became like the funny thing at the moment. And so I just kind of incorporated it, and you know, because I thought the Dorsey Horses thing was starting to get a little played out, because at the time, like X-Pac was doing it then, and a few other people started doing it, and I was like, and I was like, even though nobody did it that I know of when I did it, I was like, now it feels like I'm kind of copying everybody, so. I kind of just started doing the shocker thing. This, you know, again, just to kind of throw a little comedy in there.
And it was the Attitude Era too, so
yeah, that's
you know,
true.
It fit right in. You know, that's when wrestling was in that time frame there, so it fit right in. So let's talk a little bit about moving on from the IWA over to FIW.
Mm-hmm.
So why'd you make the jump to FIW?
Well, the honest reason is, I mean, there's a bunch of rumors about that and me going over and,
mm-hmm.
you know, I got portrayed as, you know, something that wasn't 100% true. And, you know, I got called cult leaders and a traitor. And I got called a lot of things, but I never let, you know, any of that stuff bother me. But, I mean, the honest truth was at the time I was in the IWA and I was the U.S. champion. And also I was going up into Canada with Roadblock and Tank and Casanova Click and DDK and a bunch of guys. We were, you know, had a company up there we were going to. And we had booked a show up in Canada, all of us. And I was at the training center one night. And at this time, you know, I'd heard about FIW and somebody, another wrestler had approached me and said, FIW is starting up. It's a new promotion. They've already contacted me, blah, blah, blah. They're interested in talking to you. And I've always had the belief, you know, yeah, it's not if you work for a company, you know, it's wrestling, you're basically a subcontractor. So, you know, there's no, you know, there should be loyalty and respect, but you're not, you know, you don't have to stay at that same promotion only. So I was saying, you know, like, yeah, sure, I'll talk to them if they want to talk. I don't care. And I hadn't at the time, but I was at the school one night at IWA and Bull had come up and said that he had booked a show, and it just so happened that the show was booked the same night as the Canada show. And I told him, you know, I was like, well, I'm already booked with everybody up in Canada, so, you know, I can't cancel that one because I was there first. And he got kind of mad at me, and, you know, he said, well, you're my United States champion. I put the belt on you. You have to be there. And you know, it was kind of like a back and forth, and I was like, you know, dude, I'm sorry. I'm already booked in Canada. So he just kind of, in his own words, said, you know, well, if you don't work this show, then you're no longer working for this company, in his own kind of words. So I went home. I was like, okay. I was like, well, let me think about it. So I went home, and I slept on it. And, you know, I was just like, you know, I'm working here. I'm not getting paid anything. Yeah, I'm not making a dime for doing his wrestling shows. You know, and I said, if I go up into Canada, at least I'm exploring new markets, and who knows who I'm going to run into. So I just went back to the school the next day and I gave him his U.S. belt back and I told him, you know, thanks for everything, but I'm going to do the Canada show. And I left. And, so I, you know, I left there and I got in contact with the guy that told me that, FIW was contacting him. And, you know, I said, hey, I quit working IWA. I was like, so let me talk to this FIW guy. And it kind of just went from there.
Gotcha. Well, you know what? You know, we'll go ahead and talk about FIW. What was your first impressions of that company when you came in?
I mean, it seemed like it was a good deal. I mean, the guy was nice enough at the time, and he was saying all the right things, and he had a lot of different ideas. He didn't have a wrestling background, so he didn't have like that old school mentality. He was more of like a showman type of guy, I guess you could say. So, I mean, everything he was saying, you know, I was like, oh, that's kind of a good idea. That's neat. And then I saw a couple of his first shows, and, you know, they weren't the greatest, but they weren't completely terrible. So, you know, I was just like, well, I mean, the guy's kind of on the right track. It's, you know, close to home in Columbus. And we just kind of, you know, he asked us basically to come in and to, like, help his students and stuff and try to, you know, he's just trying to get better talent, I guess I would say is the case.
Gotcha. So what would you say is probably maybe one of your biggest memories from the IWA? Let's go there first. I was going to ask the question about FIW. What's maybe one of your best memories of working in the IWA? Match or whatnot? Or
yeah, I have a lot of great memories from IWA. I mean, I'll never say anything bad about the guys. I mean, you know, or the company or anything. Yeah, you know, I met a lot of great people that I'm still friends with today.
Mm-hmm.
Probably my best match or one of my favorite matches that I had the most fun was, me and Marcus Dillon. I think we were in Johnstown High School in Johnstown, Ohio. And, it was a really good match. It was just a normal match and, had a dusty finish in there. And we went outside, you know, outside the building because, you know, it was so crowded and the kids were all around us. So we went like outside the building and fought out there so I could, you know, and then I got cut open, you know, I'm doing the finger quotes and, you know, come back inside and the kids were just amazed, you know, like, oh my God, he's bleeding. And I mean, it was just like an all around fun experience. And that's just, you know, that's just one that comes to mind.
Yeah.
When I was with the Riot Squad, you know, my matches with the Casanova Clique was always fun. I've had numerous matches with Sherman Tank that was real, you know, it was really fun and memorable for me. Roadblock, same thing. Mm-hmm. I mean, just a bunch of different, you know, like I said, I don't really have one particular favorite one.
Okay.
It was just an all around good time for me, really.
How about FIW? Do you have any specific best memory or best match that comes to mind?
Yeah, probably the one I liked there was in Crooksville, Ohio, was me and Matt Mason, and it's on YouTube. I got the video for it from YouTube, and yeah, that match was fun. That's where I think that might have been the first or second place where I broke out the Dorsey double stack.
I forgot about that.
Right, yeah. So that one was a fun match. And then at Media Play, I mean, we had a lot of negative feedback from the workers about Media Play, but yeah, that we had a tag match, and it was me and Marcus Dillon against Tank and Matt Mason. And we had Drew Hansen, who was with WNCI at the time, was the special guest ref. And so that match was pretty fun. And, I mean, I had a lot of good matches there that I thought was fun, but, those probably are the two that stick out most.
Well, I guess I got to ask, cause I forgot about it. You just mentioned his name. What about your match with Drew Hansen? Do you like to talk about that? Do you want to talk about that? The idea behind it or whatnot?
Yeah. I'm
fine. Okay. All right.
Yeah. Basically behind the scenes, idea behind the whole thing was, you know, he was a radio disc jockey that had a dream of wrestling in a wrestling match. And, you know, he started helping out with FIW and we became, you know, friends and stuff. And, he wanted me to, you know, wrestle his first match with him and, you know, help him out. So that was basically what I did. So that's how they came up with the, you know, the Mark Stone versus Drew Hansen for FIW control. And, mm-hmm. you know, we had our own teams and, mm-hmm. And Mark Stone, you know, brought me in as his ringer to take on Drew Hansen to ensure that he keeps the company. And then, you know, long story short, I ended up turning after beating Drew Hansen for, you know, 15, 20 minutes, however long it was. I kind of like turned the tables and let Drew pin me on purpose so Mark Stone could lose the company. But I mean, yeah, that whole story was just basically we were, giving Drew, you know, making his dream come true, I guess you could say.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, his dream was to wrestle in a professional wrestling match. So we, you know, helped train him a little bit. We didn't have a whole lot of time. So we, you know, we just helped train him and got him in there and we played like rock music all the way through our match so I could talk to him and, you know, keep talking to him through the match without the crowd hearing me. So that was kind of the idea behind the music playing the whole time.
The question, where did you think that, because, I mean, for those that don't know, in the Columbus wrestling scene, that was the last FIW show ever.
Right, yeah.
The company closed up. Did you have any indications that was going to happen?
I kind of did. I mean, I'd heard rumors and stuff through the grapevine that, you know, he was moving on. And I don't know if it was, I don't know if it was like money or he just, you know, he was an entertainment marketing guy that just lost his interest. I don't know what the real story was. But I kind of heard that was going to be the last one. And, ironically, that was pretty much when my last match was, too. I think I'd had one match a couple years later in Nelsonville, just as fun. And, yeah, that was my last match as well.
I'm going to ask if you will snuff out a rumor, so to speak.
All right.
True or false, you have the FIW tape library. That's a rumor I've been told.
Yeah, true with a caveat.
Okay.
I basically got everything because Mark Stone was pretty much finished with the company and he was moving on to the things he's doing. And he said, if you want the library, you want everything FIW related, it's yours. So, I have the URL and all that stuff. I had the entire tape collection from day one to the day they started. And it sat here in my basement and I had it all packed up on a nice shelf. And it sat here in my basement for, you know, many, 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 many years, 10 years maybe. And,
people was asking, you know, and I wanted, my initial goal was to get it all on video somehow and digital and take everybody's, you know, all my boys, you know, buddies and all that, take their matches and put them on disc form so they could have them, you know, to go back to. And I heard about the last year, 2 years ago, rugby thug Trent Baker, he said, you know, he would take the videos and look them over and start putting them on YouTube and putting them out there and making disc for everybody. And when we started to get into watching them and going through them, probably 75 to 80% of them is just white static now.
So
I mean, we're only able to get certain things off of certain tapes. And I remember probably about 5 or 6 years before that, I had found the camera and I was going through some of the matches and all the tapes seemed to be playing fine. But I don't know if it was just age or, you know, I mean, my basement's cold and it's not damp or nothing, but I'm down here now in my office. So I don't know if it was just age or I don't know what happened, but yeah, like 75 to 80% of it's gone.
Oh man.
Yeah. So that kind of sucks, but I mean, yes, I did have it all, but I don't have as much of it now because it's all white static. If there's somebody that knows how to recover that kind of stuff, I'm more than willing to talk to them to try to recover it. But
yeah. Yeah.
If they can.
Yeah, most definitely. Look, I'm going to share a story with you that I know you may know. I don't know. Mark actually offered me everything for FIW.
Oh, really?
Know that? Yeah, because just real quickly, I'm going to digress for a minute. He called me one night and said he wanted to meet, and I drove out to Reynoldsburg, and that's when he told me I'm done. And I was like, okay, that's cool, whatever, man, you know. And he asked if I could take him, because his wife had the car, if I could take him to another friend's house. I'm like, yeah, sure, man, just jump in my truck. So I went over, and he said, if you want it, man, I'll give you all the tape library, the banners, the website, the hotline and everything. But the hotline, I think, was like $150 in debt. And I think something was up with the website, too. And I, to be honest with you, man, I was like, thank you, but no thank you. Because I just couldn't figure out, like, I didn't know what I would do with it, you know?
Right.
And then later, come to find out, Tim Shady was trying to get it from him. Using an alias and whatnot, like emailing him, and I was like, man, if you just said something, I would have gotten it and given it to you, because, I mean, you know.
Right, yeah.
I didn't know that.
Didn't
know that? Okay.
He just contacted me and said, you want it? And I was just, you know, because he was done and was going to get rid of it. I was like, yeah, hell, why not? I was like, I'll come over and pick it up.
I just hesitated because at the time, like, to just 100% honesty, my professional life and my paychecks were not that big. And I was like, I don't have the money to bail out a website or a phone hotline. And I don't have the money to put on shows. You know what I mean?
Yeah, so I didn't do the phone hotline part. So I was the first I'd heard of that and it being in debt and stuff.
Yep.
I just basically got the URL and the tapes and stuff. That was about it.
Yeah. Well, let's talk a little bit about, you mentioned your last match was against Drew Hansen, except for that one match in Nelsonville.
Mm-hmm.
Why did you quit? Did you quit because of injuries? Did you quit because you just lost your passion? Why did you hang up?
It was a mixture of everything. I would, when I came back, I left FIW after a year or so,
mm-hmm.
and went to IWA Mid-South for a little while down there in Ian Rotten's place.
Mm-hmm.
And Rugby Thug actually got me in down there. So I went down there and I had a couple, you know, good matches. Those are also on YouTube. They were a little rough and violent and bloody. And I did that for maybe 6 months. And, you know, just the drive to Indiana all the time was a little much. And, cause you know, at that time I was young and broke and job jumping and all that stuff. So I had to stop going there and I came back to FIW. But when I came back to FIW, I was pretty beat up, and you know, because I always do everything, you know, like I'm a stiff worker, and you know, I, you know, throw my body around probably more than I should, and it was just taking a toll. And plus, I was, you know, overweight and, you know, not the best shape, so I wasn't really mentally or physically built for it. And it just started taking a toll on me. So that was one of the main reasons. You know, I had like hip injuries, and I've had knee surgery, I had broken noses, I've had multiple concussions, I had a brain bleed that it was close to where I could have possibly died, and I had to go in the hospital. Yeah, I had to go in the hospital for that.
Did that happen up here? Or did that happen in
No, it was in, yeah, it was in FIW. It was a tag match. It was me and Marcus and the Roughnecks, and Country likes to take credit for it, but the truth of the matter is, you know, I had him in the corner when it was on the second ropes doing the 10 punch deal, and when he pushed me off, I didn't take my bump right, and my head like smacked the mat real hard, and hours later it kind of started setting in, and my wife and the Coyote had to pretty much like drag me to the car. And when they got me in the car, my wife was driving me to the hospital, and we had to pull over on 104 because I was getting sick, and I was like vomiting out the car door, like right there on the freeway. And then she finally got me to the hospital, and that's when they found out that I'd actually had like a brain bleed. So that was kind of dangerous and scary. But I mean, yeah, the injuries was a factor, and then the other factor was, you know, like I said, I was job jumping. We were broke. We were trying to start a family. Mm-hmm. We had a, you know, our third baby on the way, and it was just kind of a wake up call. Like, you know, you got to stop doing this and get yourself settled. You know, you got a family, you got to raise now, like I said, the babies and stuff was kind of a wake up call to. I needed to get settled in and basically provide for my family and let my body take a rest and heal. So that was pretty much the reason.
Yeah. So you talked that you wrestled in IWA Mid-South and up in Canada. What other companies were you with during your time?
IWA, the FIW, the IWA Mid-South, the one up in Canada, I think it was Renegade Championship Wrestling, mm-hmm. RCW. Basically that was pretty much my main thing. So I didn't really travel a whole lot. There was a couple down south. I worked with Casey Stryker and them up here. Where was it at? I think it was up here, up north near, Marion and all them.
Mm-hmm.
That was like my main places. You know, I didn't travel too much or go to too many fancy places.
So the IWA Mid-South, I mean, it's notorious for having a very violent style of wrestling. Mm-hmm. It's notorious for some very weird things going on in the locker room. Did you see any of that type of stuff?
Pretty much all the stories you hear are true. You know, the most famous one is the piss bucket in the corner.
Yes. Yep.
Yeah. So that one was always a famous, which I will say that I never did have to take outside and empty. So I did.
Oh, good. Good. Excellent.
I did escape that chore. if you hear backstage, you know, behind the scenes rumors about IWA Mid-South, yeah, chances are they're probably true. But yeah, like I said, I said a lot of people have different opinions of Ian. My opinions of him are always been good. Mm-hmm. Yeah, like I said, I was only there, you know, 6 months, but I never had nothing negative mm-hmm. with him. You know, like I said, my first two or three matches was against Ian as my way of earning my way in there. And he was always, you know, kind to me and respectful, and you know, he always commented or complimented me on my matches. And he beat the crap out of me, but, you know, that's part of it. So.
Yeah, right.
But, you know, like, and everybody was real nice in the back, and, back there, like, Hero and Colt Cabana and CM Punk and Necro Butcher when he first got going, all those guys was back there, and me and Rugby Thug and BJ Whitmere. And, I mean, there was just a bunch. If I had known, you know, the talent that I was around at the time, I would have probably have, you know, picked more brains and asked more questions. But, you know, basically when you're the new guy at IWA Mid-South and the reputation they had, my just main focus was not getting beat too bad and getting killed.
Yeah,
and not trying to screw up, you know. So.
And I'm sure you were brought in, you know, like many wrestlers, when you're new, shut up and just listen. Don't. So, I mean, I think that mentality obviously too plays in that type of a situation.
Right.
So what would you say was your toughest opponent ever?
There's probably two or three. Sherman Tank was probably, me and him probably had the most matches against each other.
Okay.
And, you know Sherman Tank real well. And he's big. He's,
yep.
He's stiff. And, you know, if you do something he don't like, he'll let you know it. And, you know, that matched up good with me because I'm the same way. You know, I like to work stiff and, so we had fun. Roadblock was another one. He was real tough on me, and beat me up pretty good. So those were probably my toughest and hardest matches. The Ian, the matches with Ian were, they look bloody and they look really violent and it looks like he just killed me, but in reality he was actually, real good to me. I mean, yeah, some of the stuff hurt real bad, but it hurt a lot less than it could have, if you know what I mean. I'd probably say if I had to pick just one, I'd probably say Tank.
Okay.
Yeah, because me and him, I mean, we both knew, we didn't have to tell each other, let's try to be a little rough with each other to make it look more realistic, or, hey, if I do something, I'm sorry. We just both kind of knew, hey, we're going to go out there and we're going to beat the crap out of each other. And, if something bad happens, we'll apologize afterwards. Yeah, we just kind of went out there and did it.
All right, well, now you're segueing, you're transitioning. After being out of the business for a long time, as you said before we started recording, you're now one of many people behind New Ohio Wrestling. So yeah. Do you want to explain why you're deciding to, I guess, are you a promoter, first of all? Should I call you that? Because I know that that's, for some boys, that's a bad, bad term to use, promoter.
Right. Yeah, I mean, I if you want to say that I'm the promoter or the owner of the company, that would be accurate.
Okay.
Yeah, like I said, I stepped away from probably 10 or 12 years and, got my life together, got my family's life together. I got a real good job now that pays pretty good. Mm-hmm. We got everything going good. And, but there was just something missing. I'd stay away for a couple of years and I'd be like, dang, man, wonder what everybody else was doing. And, thank God for social media and Facebook, because that's when I really started getting back in touch with everybody, and it made me miss it more. So just for last few years, I've just been missing it, and I'd go to a show here and a show there. I went to a couple of the War Anniversary shows. I went to a couple of the OCW shows just to kind of see everybody again, and it just kind of started lighting that fire again, to where I want to be back around it. I mean, because wrestling people get bad raps all the time. But the people I've met in wrestling and the family and the brotherhood and partnerships I've built through wrestling is probably some of the greatest, people I've ever met and known. And, I just kind of I missed being around all of that. So, and I'm realistic, I'm 42. Oh, actually I just turned 43 2 days ago. I'm overweight. I probably could, it would probably do me good to lose 100 pounds. I haven't been in a ring for over 10 years, so I wasn't saying, I wasn't saying, hey, I'm going to start a promotion so I can wrestle and, put the belt on myself and be this big shot and on my own wrestling show. I just think that's stupid.
Yeah.
And while I was away, I've started a couple home businesses and I've tried to, learn about business and being smart. And, so my wife, she had been bugging me for years saying, cause she likes wrestling too. She's a wrestling fan. She loved the business. She just hated Shank for the most part. And, she was like, you keep talking about it, you keep mentioning it. And she's like, I keep telling you to do it. You just need to start doing it. So I kind of put the, the wheels in motion. So I just started and see, I'm not the type of person I like to just jump into something. So I just started like researching and thinking and doing all this and that, and I kind of came up with a game plan of if I was to ever start a promotion of how I would like to do it and how I would like it to be different than from what I'm used to here in Ohio. And, just try to think outside the box. And, so it just, oddly enough, I mentioned it to a couple people, the rugby thug Trent Baker, I mentioned it to him, and he was like, he just fell off the map too. You couldn't even find him. He became like a mystery. And, he started coming back around and I've got in touch with him on social media. And then Tim Taylor from down in Cincinnati area, he was friends with us from IWA Mid-South. And, Trent said that Tim was in Columbus and looking to help out or if somebody was to get something going. So he kind of is offering some advice and helping out with some stuff here and there. And then I brought it up to Matt Mason because, Matt Mason, gives me all kind of praise and says I helped him with this and I helped him with that. But, I mean, I think I respect Matt Mason more than he realizes. And he says he's thankful for the things I did for him and mm-hmm. he looks up to me. But it's kind of, the same with me, just seeing the stuff he's done and how he's become real respectful. And I mean, in the locker room, he's probably like one of the
favorite people from everybody, from what I hear. Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's got a great reputation. He's got a great mind for the business. And so he felt the same way, you know, we did. So I kind of, you know, and we all just, you know, were like, well, this would be cool. And we started bouncing ideas off of each other. And they said that, you know, it would be smart instead of like everybody doing a partnership. You know, you got to have the one guy at the top of the high, you know, the hierarchy or whatever.
Sure.
And so they said, you know, we got to figure out who wants to be the main guy to take the, you know, to take the reins and go from there. And you know, it kind of was just decided that I would be that guy. So
and obviously you're comfortable with that, obviously.
Yeah. I'm working with it. You know, it's growing pains, but you know, I went and I started an LLC and you know, I'm trying to do it the right way. And I got, you know, all the business part, the business bank account. I got all that set up. And then, you know, we started coming up with a game plan. And, so yeah, like I said, all four of us at the start were all in it together, but I was, I was kind of the one that they put at the top to, you know, because you got to have that one guy, you know.
Sure, yeah.
And so then we started coming up with ideas and we started looking into stuff and, you know, we thought about wrestling promotions and I got these other ideas for other, you know, stuff to make money with that I'm working on. And then we thought about a wrestling school. So we contacted James Avery and his school over in Newark and said, you know, could we stop by and check it out and just see you guys? We haven't seen you guys, you know, whatever. And he welcomed us in and we went to a couple of his school or his training sessions and he was there and Tommy Chill and Cyrus Poe and they're, you know, training the students there. And, you know, we walk up, me and Trent Baker, and he basically stopped the class and all he says, you know, introduced us and showed us our names was on posters he had on his wall. And
how'd that make you feel?
It made me feel good, you know, just
okay.
Seeing
him. All right, yeah. Yeah, it's good.
But, yeah, he did that. And then he said, what do we do to our guests when they show up? And, like, without hesitation, all of his students got out of the ring and, like, walked over to us and shook our hands and, you know, introduced themselves. And I was just like, wow, man. I was like, that's pretty cool. You know, that's pretty professional of him.
Yeah, so, from what I understand, Avery's doing a great job out there in Newark. From what I've heard, he's doing a fabulous job with all those trainees.
I always recommend his school pretty much over any of them here in the state. And, you know, like I said, just seeing all that, it just gave me another idea and just made me want to even do it even more, you know, because it wasn't like that when I was coming in. You know, the respect and everything wasn't there.
Yeah.
It was, you know, you're the low guy on the totem pole. You do what you're told. And, you know, if we screw you over, we just screw you over. And, excuse me.
Yeah, and I was going to say, you know, the mere fact that you have a business plan in place is far heads and tails above some of the promotions that I've been affiliated with, you've been affiliated with, where it's kind of just do it by the seat of our pants, you know. And
right.
You know, no, so
there's a game plan in place. It's a multi-level game plan. And the promotion was supposed to come later, like a couple of years down the road. But, you know, me and Tim Taylor and Matt Mason and Trent Baker sitting around my kitchen table, and I kind of got outvoted. So they said it would be a better idea to, you know, start the promotion first and then do the other stuff. And, you know, I kind of saw their point and said, yeah, you guys are probably right. So that's how it all came about.
And your first show is going to be August 1st, right?
August 1st at the Resolute Athletic Complex, right across from Chiller Easton.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And the doors will open at 6, the show's at 7?
Correct.
Yep. Correct? Yep. All right. And where can people get tickets if they're interested in coming on out on August 1st?
They can get them at the Resolute Athletic Complex. Mm-hmm. They are selling them there now. We are also selling them online. You can go to NOW1. The number one, and then it's .eventbrite.com.
Okay.
And you can do pre-sale there, and then, or you can just get them at the door the day of.
And I believe, just real quickly, for some folks that may not know, because I actually had to look this up, the Resolute Athletic Complex is the old sports barn over there at Easton. For those folks that might be listening, they're like, what is that? Because I'm going to be 100% honest, Shank. I was a little confused. I was like, where the hell is that at? And
right.
Then I looked it up online. I'm like, oh, it's the old sports barn. Okay, so...
Right.
which I'm curious to see how that'll look there on August 1st, because that's a cool setup that they have over there.
Yeah, it's a real good setup, and we actually found it by accident. We were supposed to run our first show in Chillicothe, because we had got in contact with some people through the military,
mm-hmm.
and we're in the process of booking the Chillicothe Armory down there. And, you know, we booked all the wrestlers. We got everything set up, and the military is notoriously slow on everything they do.
Yes.
So it was, there was no way that we were going to be able to get everything done in time, because, I bought the insurance, and I, filled out the paper and sent it in, and it was like a month, and it only went up the chain like one level. So we were kind of, me and the rugby thug, we were kind of like, man, we're running out of time. We got to find something. So we just started scrambling and just looking for places around Columbus one day. This was like, in one day we ran around, we checked out like six buildings and it didn't work out. Another time we checked out two or three, it didn't work out. And then this one, we just kind of stumbled across two. And we went in there and started talking to them. And, one thing led to another, and we kind of came to an agreement on it. But it's a huge place. It's two gigantic soccer fields with a bar connected to in the middle, mm-hmm. kind of a deal. So it's a pretty good place. We're going to try it out and see how it works, and we're still looking for other places. We eventually want to get our own place, our own building,
mm-hmm.
and be somewhere stable to where they know we'll be there every time.
Yeah, most definitely.
We got to start where we got to start.
All right. Well, with that being said, where can people check out information about the show? I know you guys have a Facebook page. Is that the predominant place where you want to go?
Yeah.
Or,
okay. Yeah, we don't have the website up and going yet. And like I said, I'm the kind of person that I like to do things one step at a time and make sure it's done, make sure I do it right. So it's kind of slow going, and it drives, some of the guys crazy because they want me to go faster than I am. just facebook.com/ New Ohio Wrestling is our main point of passing along information at this time. And then, like I said, the website is coming. And then we're on Twitter as well. It's also New Ohio Wrestling, but it's not without the G. It's WRESTLIN.
Okay.
And that's like our main places right now.
Okay, cool. Well, man, hey, it's getting up there about 55 minutes here that we've been talking, so I'm going to kind of wrap things up. Do you have any regrets?
There's, some. The way there was a couple incidents that, I may have acted the way I shouldn't. Toward other workers and maybe have been disrespectful, which I do completely apologize for. Like I said, I don't know if I've ever done anything and wronged somebody and I haven't known about it. there's a couple things like that. Just young and you think you're better than you are until reality hits you in the face. But like I said, this is my way of kind of making it right as, not really that, I guess I shouldn't say that. That's the only reasons. Everybody says something they regret. But other than that, I wouldn't really do anything differently because there really wasn't a different way to do it for me at the time.
Yep.
Yeah, back then I didn't have Facebook or YouTube or nothing like that.
Yeah.
So it was basically just me trying to get where I could get it. But I don't really regret how I trained and where I trained and the places I went.
Mm-hmm.
I'm thankful and grateful for all I did. Like I said earlier, my only goal was to, be good enough to do one match. And, I was, in it for 5 years, and I wouldn't say I was one of the top guys in the area, but, people like to work with me and stuff. So.
Yeah. I was going to say one match, man, you had probably 500?
Yeah, pretty close to that.
So your goal was accomplished, I would say. Check that bad boy off. So,
yeah.
Hey, Shane, thanks for coming on, man. It was fun. I hope you had fun, man. And definitely, folks, you need to go on out and check out New Ohio Wrestling. And thanks for coming on, man.
All right, thanks. No problem. Anytime.
All right, I'm going to throw it to a quick break, and then I'll be back to wrap up this episode.
For 16 years, the Small Press and Alternative Comics Expo has been providing independent creators a chance to show the world their work. Space is coming to the Northland Performing Arts Center on July 18th and 19th. Come check out over 200 creators from all over the U.S.
and even Canada,
displaying their comic books, graphic novels, web comics, artwork, etc. I mean, folks, several of the exhibitors that are going to be there, you've already heard on this podcast. People like Steve Steiner, Max Inc., Ken Epstein, Dar Naragi, and Bob Corby. Come on out and meet them in person. I swear they don't bite. No. Seriously, if you want to come out and check out some cool, interesting creations, Space, July 18th and 19th, over at the Northland Performing Arts Center, 4411 Tamarack Boulevard in Columbus, Ohio. Be there, or be square. Giving a little love to Space, which is happening next weekend there. That, of course, followed my conversation with Shank Dorsey. You know, let me just talk real quick about Space. I'm excited to go. I'm definitely going on Sunday the 19th. I might be going in the morning on the 18th, but I have a big Ohio Championship Wrestling show, Mogador Summerfest, that evening on the 18th, Mogador, kind of close to Akron, so it's a little bit of a drive. So I don't know how much time I'm going to have Saturday morning, but definitely Sunday, I'm going to be at Space. I'm going to be hanging out with all those creative individuals. There's very talented individuals over at Space, and if you get the opportunity, like I just said in that little plug, you need to come on out. But, you know, let's talk about my conversation with Shank Dorsey. New Ohio Wrestling coming to Columbus, Ohio, over in Easton, the Resolute Athletic Complex, August 1st. You heard all the details of how you can get your hands on some tickets, and, you know, you should definitely check it out. I mean, Columbus Wrestling, quite frankly, on an independent level, doesn't happen all the time. You know, there's a show here and there, but to have a consistent show, you know, month in, month out here in Columbus, that hasn't happened in quite a long time. So hopefully NOW will change that. And the future, I think, is going to be bright for that corporation and for that particular promotion, if you will. Corporation? Well, they are an LLC. You heard him say it. I guess that would be accurate. Anyways, so ladies and gentlemen, before I close out this episode, let me get into Orlando Spades and Orlando Hates. Anyways, that's right. The double barrel shotgun that is Orlando's faves and Orlando hates shall appear here in episode 72. Okay, both of these, fave and hate, both of these items are film related. You know, I'm really embarrassed as being a film buff, and I mentioned this a couple episodes ago when I chatted with Paul Markoff. I'm embarrassed that I haven't been to the theater a lot in the last few months. And, you know, so I'm trying to make up for it. I'm trying to see what can I see, what can I view, what can I watch that would be quick and easy through some type of streaming service. So, one movie that I really wanted to see last fall that I never got an opportunity to see is the film Rosewater. Now, for those that don't know, Rosewater is a film that was directed by Jon Stewart from The Daily Show. And it's based on the memoir Then They Came For Me by Mazi Bahari. Bahari was a reporter that went to Iran during the 2009 presidential elections, and he participated in a Daily Show sketch that same year, in which then was perceived by the Iranian government that he was working with American spies, and he was captured and he was held for, oh God, I think like 120 days almost. The film is really well done, and it's my fave for this episode. I really liked it. I thought it tells an interesting story that's pretty factual to what happened to Mr. Bahari. And, you know, I guess I was just, I marvel at how he managed to stay grounded, you know, being in solitary confinement for almost 120 days. I think that would drive me batshit crazy. And I know many of you are going, John, you're already batshit crazy. But I digress, you know, not to make light of it. But that was a very well done film. I really liked it a lot. I highly recommend if anybody is interested in that kind of, I guess you could say, political type of film, definitely check out Rosewater. I know it's playing on Netflix right now, so head on over there and enjoy it. It's an interesting film. Really dug it. Now, for Orlando Hates. And this is going to be a very long explanation, so I'm just warning you right now that we may go a good 10 minutes on this rant, if you will. In late April, early May, there was a buzz about a documentary that was made specifically for Netflix called Hot Girls Wanted. The directors were Jill Bauer and I hope I'm pronouncing this correctly, Rana Gratis. It was produced by Rashida Jones, and many of you may know her from Parks and Rec or Boston Legal or Boston Public, excuse me, not Boston Legal. But anyway, she's Quincy Jones' daughter, and I've always enjoyed her work, especially on Parks and Rec. And I remember seeing her on a morning show talking about this particular documentary. And this documentary was basically about young women who have been drawn into the sex trade and how easy it is for a web-savvy generation to end up making amateur pornography. Now, first of all, I have nothing against pornography, and, you know, I've watched porn. I mean, I don't have a big problem with it. I feel like, you know, it's out there. It's a multi-billion dollar industry, and if people weren't watching it, it wouldn't be a multi-billion dollar industry. But, you know, that's not what I was upset about with this particular film and why I don't like this film and why I'm going to just quite frankly say it's a waste of time. I think that whenever you make a documentary, contrary to what film theory tells you, that it's supposed to be non-biased, that it's supposed to be factual, I think that ultimately, in my point of view, when you decide to make a documentary, you are already biased because you're saying, people, you need to know about this, whatever that is. Whether it's a pro wrestler like the Iron Sheik, or whether it's about ice cream cones, or whatever. You're biased already because you've selected a subject that you're going to study and present in a nonfiction manner. So, I thought that from that perspective, as well as listening to Ms. Jones on morning talk shows talk about how abhorrent it was that these young ladies were quote-unquote duped into, end quote, being involved in amateur pornography, the film does not even portray that. That's the problem that I have. This is why I am so disappointed and so upset. And you know why I'm not the only one that feels this way? I watched this documentary with my girlfriend, and she totally agreed. It was just, we're going to follow four girls around, and we're going to throw out a bunch of facts, as we segue between scenes, and that was it. And it was not really, to my viewpoint, it wasn't really, like, that damning about that industry. Because, quite frankly, I don't want to spoil it for you, but one of the young ladies quits, and it's not even a big deal. Like, she calls the promoter, or the booker, if you will, that books all these girls for porn shoots, and he's saying, hey, look, I'm going to go back to this little town in Texas, I don't want to do this anymore. And he was like, oh, that's cool, man, whatever, if you decide to come back, that's cool. So, really, honestly, I believe it is just that individual's greed that has led them to this particular state in their life, and therefore I don't really feel awful for them. I don't feel bad for them. Again, that's just my take on it. I thoroughly was disgusted with the film and just in the terms of how shittily it was made. And I know that's not even an adverb, but just, if you're going to make a documentary, at least do it right. Go watch some Earl Morris, man. Because that dude's the greatest documentary maker ever, hands down. All right, with that, I've wrapped up Orlando's hates, and I've given you Orlando's faves, and so with that, let's close things up here, ladies and gentlemen. I'm going to tell you where you can get in touch with me. Maybe you want to tell me that I'm an idiot because I didn't like Hot Girls Wanted. That's fine. You can do that by simply going to Twitter, at PVDMVP, also on Instagram under that same username. You can shoot me an email, johnorlando@pvdcast.com. I mean, I don't know, maybe you agree with me. I don't know, maybe you've seen it and you agree with me. I don't know. You know, I know I'm all worked up about this. I keep going. I said I wasn't going to go on and on and on and rant and rave like a lunatic. But here I am, rambling about it. But anyways, it's what happens when you get Orlando hates as well as Orlando's faves. But anyways, all right, with that, ladies and gentlemen, I thank you very, very much for listening, and I will chat at each and every one of you later. Thanks for listening, folks.